So that started along 3 years ago. My idea, when I got started, my idea was to experiment with myself, seeing how far can I go, what can happen when a student, I was a student at that point, decides to take blogs seriously and to let the ideas go out on the weblog and connect with other scholars who are also blogging. There were not many at that time, it has grown since. And I ended up switching fields and doing my thesis on that effort that I did. And I have much more to say. When I was finished, I got hired by the NRC to continue. Basically, I'm continuing research on these kinds of things. I have two blogs. If you want to look them up, you just have to go to seb.notlong.com. That's my English language blog, my personal blog. And the other blog I contribute to is Many to Many. It's a weblog on social software. So it covers blogging, but other forms like wikis and link social bookmarking systems, social networking systems, and stuff like that. So I invite you to check it out. That's it.
All right. As one of the two very, very well-known panel, my name is Brian Alexander. I'm a former English professor. I taught 18th century studies and Gothic horror. I moved to the National Institute for Technology and Liberal Education, where I helped run the Center for Educational Technology in Middlebury, Vermont, the other end of North America from where we are today. My background very quickly, in 2000, as an experiment, I had my students in a British novel seminar use blogs for their classwork. I wanted a quick, light, fast way to get them using the web publication and to hyperlink with each other. And for political reasons, I resisted the Blackboard implementation on campus. This was immensely successful. The students loved it. It was just a dynamic way to teach, and I've been struck with it ever since. At the Center for Educational Technology, I worked on a few issues, including social software, copyright, which has a connection with Gothic terror in many ways, intercampus collaborative classes. Now, that's a form that we've worked on where it's a form of blended learning, where two or more classes teach the same subject on multiple campuses. So I taught twice a class on the American experience in Vietnam. My class was an English class in Louisiana. I had a friend in Florida teaching political science, and a friend in Richmond, Virginia, who was teaching history. We had the same syllabus. Each of us met in the classroom with chalk and blackboards. And online, we met using multiple tools, from peer-to-peer technology to web publications to simulations, to build a kind of meta class. So we complement our abilities. So I can speak more about that if you'd like, but that's one field that I've been developing since. I work in gaming, on wireless and mobile technology, new narrative forms, and along the cultural studies line, I've been publishing on what I consider the uncanny internet, the way that people project fears, anxieties, and terror onto the internet, which is a lot of fun looking at. I run a few blogs. If you Google InfoCult, that's where I research my peculiar interests. I run two blogs for Nightly, and I'm also one of the team at smartmobs.com.
Yeah, before we start, if somebody could give me the sheet of paper with the wireless login and password. I'm sitting here. Oh, there we go. Great, thanks. And I'll do that after I introduce myself. My name is Stephen Downs. Some of you may have seen me a few minutes ago. Being a heretic, I've been involved in the field of online learning for more than 10 years. Probably closer to 12 years. My background is in MUDs. If you don't know what those are multi-user online games. And we immediately changed the name from multi-user dungeons, which didn't go over well in an academic environment, to multi-user domains, which did. And so my history is of using various internet technologies to support learning online. In fact, I created a bulletin board system back in the late 80s or early 90s called Athabasca BBS. One thing I never did do is be a regular on Usenet. which separates me from the majority of academics. I've always been more involved in experiential, interactive environments rather than discussion boards or email lists or things like that. I've been blogging properly so-called since 1998, less properly so-called since 1995, but it wasn't really blogging then, didn't really know what it was. My main website is Stephen's Web. It's at downs.ca, and you can type the W's if you want as well. I have another very unpopular website called News Trolls. News Trolls, as I said in the other session or somewhere, is probably the oldest member of the long tail, since it was one of the very first blogs that went up, and it never did become popular, which is fine. And if you go to News Trolls, let me give you a language and content warning now, because it tends to be fairly vociferous. My expertise in learning is not blogs per se, although I have written about the subject. My expertise in learning is learning resources, networks of learning resources, using metadata to describe networks of learning resources, resource repositories, and content syndication. And consequently, one of my first major interactions between blogging and online learning was to propose the use of RSS to locate and distribute learning resources, and that was in a paper called Content Syndication in Online Learning. I work with SEB, with the National Research Council in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada, on the other coast, the snowy coast. And like SEB, I am a researcher there. I've been with the NRC for a little more than 3 years. And that's me.
Well, I offered to give just kind of a very simple template to possibly lead us into discussion, or at least identify general areas for discussion. It's up there, but not here. Okay, well, that's interesting. It's really just to identify that there are three, generally speaking, three sort of application areas for weblogs in academia. One is as personal research platforms, which is where I started.
Is this large enough? Do people see what's written there?
See it from here.
Yeah. How can I get it up here?
What are you on, Windows or Apple? I have no idea.
Sorry. Is someone calling Hilton?
Oh. She wants it on her screen. Somebody figure out how to get it on her screen, too. It's a weird, bizarre Apple system.
Okay. Can you keep talking?
Yeah, so it's a very simple template, folks. It's weblogs can be used by faculty instructors as research platforms for their own research, for course development, for developing kind of broader knowledge networks, for more experimental forms of in-process publishing or iterative authoring, that is to say, kind of developing using a web as a weblog as a platform for developing larger research projects. Second general area is in teaching. And very simply, practice is oriented towards instructors, faculty using, sort of augmenting their presentational platforms with the use of weblogs, often with commenting added on, and a more,
that's a lot easier when you see the screen.
Yes, it is a lot easier when you see the screen. A more extreme approach. It's a little slow here.
Yeah, it is. Who's downloading music?
Of using student weblogs. That's an area that Brian indicated he has some experience in. and we can talk about what the point is. I really am just laying out these areas. And then a third area, which isn't often touched on, but I have some experience with, is using weblogs within the academy as sort of enterprise social software. That is to say, as a space for curriculum development, for program planning, for shared work on visioning the direction of a program, and also for managing administrative tasks and administrative information management at that level, and then extending from there into communication outside. I guess actually within all three of the areas, part of the difficulty and opportunity of weblogs in education, as I think Seb was saying, is the opening up of, you know, sort of the ivory tower, the walls of the academy, that with the use of weblogs, sort of augmenting email, but weblogs in a more public form, kind of perforating the academy, opening it up to the wider world. So those are three general areas that we could discuss further. Pick up other points, and do we want to start with questions at this point, or Cyprian, did you have?
No, not yet.
So one of the things that came up this morning is how risky is it to explore in your roles within higher ed? I'm just kind of curious to know, Seb, for example, was, do you have an idea of, are you being fully supported by your institution, or is it something that you're doing in your own spare time?
Yeah, in my case, blogging has had many more positives than negatives. I've blogged in two different contexts. The first was as a graduate student, and the other one, I don't speak loud enough, I'm sorry. Okay, so I've had the opportunity to blog academically in two different contexts. The first was as a completely unknown graduate student at some university. I was at Université de Montréal. And now what I'm doing is as a research officer at the National Research Council of Canada. Now, the way blogging has been useful to me back when I was a student was, first of all, I had ideas that I wanted to bounce off others, but I couldn't find who these others were at that point. And I didn't find them within my own institution. Within my department, people were all off to other different things. I was in the computer science department, and the ideas I had were more along the ideas of networking, using scholarly communication, studying scholarly communication per se, which wasn't a topic of interest at that department. So by blogging, I just started putting it out there, and what happened is I started getting readers and links to my writing, and I thanks to refer tracking, that's a technical detail that lets you see who's linking to you. I was able to discover collaborators. I was able to build a network without having published anything that was that had gone through the normal peer reviewing process. I was able to embed myself in the creative network of researchers and people outside academia who were thinking along similar lines as I was. These people were scattered across the world, and it was really obvious that we'd meet at some point, but it eventually happened. Like, started having conferences about blogging, just like we are right now. There were blog talk conferences in Vienna. And blogging was one of my key research interests. So I eventually met these people with whom I had already began thinking of them as collaborators, colleagues, way before I even got the chance to meet them. So I guess that's the key thing that I got out of blogging as a student. So it enabled me to pick a topic that I really cared about and develop it and let the network form itself around me. If you want to take a self-centered way, you can see it as that. Or otherwise, you find your place in the network based on what you care about. And just by crossing your fingers and hoping that the readers clicking on links like mad. That's what they do. Well, they click links and they read, and they find you. I know it because I'm a reader myself. So I discovered people. I discovered Stephen. I discovered Laura, Brian. By exploring that way, and it goes both ways, and eventually it gels into something coherent. As long as what you're doing is not like. I realize that it's very good that I was thinking about weblogs and the impact of the web on scholarship. That meant that many of the people who cared about that were already in that space, that blogging space. It's obviously harder if you care about a topic that is rather obscure and where people are less likely to be already in that space. There's already someone. Kara?
Yeah. What were the reactions of you? You don't get it as long as you speak. What were the reactions of the people inside your department?
Mostly there was no reaction. And I considered that as a good thing.
I can say a few things to that. Can everyone hear me? The wonderful staff just gave me some doses of medicine for head pain, and I don't know what it was, so if any moment I start hallucinating, please enjoy. It was okay. Well, we'll see. I had a similar experience in that most of my colleagues had no idea what I was talking about. When I said blog in 2000, they thought I had an outbreak of Tourette's syndrome. One advantage I had was that I could say, okay, I went to blogger.com very easily, and I'll say a word about that in a minute. We could run down to a lab, and any student, and these weren't engineers, these were just any random undergrad, could in 5 minutes have a blog with a unique URL. So it could be Laura's British Literature Journal page.blogspot.com. Then we could leave the computer lab and go back to the classroom. And that was a huge selling point for my colleagues, because they were terrified in English and other humanities of the computer classroom. And because the technological demands are so low, I could say in class, okay, next week, please write a link to a resource about Dickens and the social novel, and then pick an argument with one of your classmates and explain why they're wrong or why they're right. So that was an advantage. A downside, do you all know course management tools like Blackboard or OCP? Does anyone not know what those are? That reaction is, I like that, I agree. Yeah. These are immensely, immensely popular in the United States, I think in Canada as well. Given one, Blackboard is the other one, and Blackboard, they like to show up at conferences all wearing black shirts with Blackboard on them. I'll keep my assessment of that to a minimum. But the problem with this, there are a lot of problems pedagogically. But if you select away from that and pick blogging as a tool, you run the risk of flying afoul with some sense of campus mission. So if the campus invests some psychological heft in Blackboard or WebCT or Angel, my first class, there's a financial import, but partly it's perceptual, because these are actually fairly cheap compared to, say, Banner or something. A downside of this is I was using Blogger, which is hosted. I think you all know Blogger. If you don't, it's a great first step in blogging. But it was hosted off-site. So this had several problems. One was that this made me and my students dependent on a perfect connection. And that isn't always the case in small colleges. Second, there was a branding issue in that the name of every student's blog did not have the college name in it. And while this might sound bizarre or political, this is a major issue for some people. So what way to get around that is to host a blog. But then you tell the IT department, either I'm going to volunteer to host a blog, which means they try to kill you, setting up some kind of rogue thing, or you say, hi, would you please have a blog? It's really easy. Then they shoot you, because they have their time and their reward. And so that's a problem. That's an issue. One solution is to have some kind of collaborative off-site hosting. But those are a couple of responses.
I'm sure my question here will be,
I guess I would say that my Sorry? The question is about a practical issue about how much information can be conveyed through a text-based medium. Is that
I think the limitations.
The limitations.
Of the human mind in terms of digital life and the
effort
to absorb the information to adapt
to that. Right, right. No, I don't think those are. I think that's an elemental question that's deeply important. The first thought that comes to my mind is in my experience teaching, starting before I went to weblogs, I was teaching history and theory courses in using a discussion board system. We used a couple of different ones. And I found that the level of discussion that you were able to have with students and able to encourage them to have with one another, and therefore the kind of ownership over the development of the ideas going to the students, was way beyond anything that you could have face-to-face, because it allows for reflection both on what other students have said and then on what they're saying. Plus there's a development of writing skills that happens in a way that I think is going to serve students in exactly this way. Going into an increasingly sort of digitized culture, it's less and less important. It's still important that they learn kind of proper essay form, but learning how to quickly engage through the textual interface, think on their feet in collaboration with others, is increasingly at a premium in order to be contributors to the culture. So I think that it's partly a question of what exactly when and where they're used. You need to get a good match of what the learning goals are and then what the platform is. But also, in a general way, I think it's increasingly important to incorporate these skills into the curriculum so that our students have the skills that they need when they get out.
Yeah, I just want to add to that very briefly. And compare online learning with what it's being stacked up against, because yeah, it's true. I mean, some students are really awful typers. I was a really awful typer, and the tools are awful. It's most learning environments right now are really horrible to work in, and you'd much rather be in a classroom because this is great, right? We can do this. We can argue back and forth. But this isn't, a session like this isn't what online learning is competing with. On the one hand, you have, for many people, online learning or nothing. And what online learning does is it gives you access. Sure, you can only type 35 words a minute, which means it's going to be slow. But 35 words a minute is a whole lot faster than not being able to communicate at all, which is the situation that many people find themselves in. I cut my teeth in this field, teaching with Athabasca University in northern Alberta, and student after student after student would say to me, well, I'm taking your class, even though we're using horrible phone system and it's costing a fortune, because the alternative is, I live in a little town in northern Alberta, there is no alternative. Or, I'm doing it on my coffee break because I work two jobs and I can't take night school. Things like that. So it's not whether online learning is better than traditional learning. In some cases it is, and in some cases it isn't. And there have been lots of studies, and the studies say overall no significant difference. But where online learning, and where blogging for that matter, really comes into play is it gives people capacities they never had. How many words a minute can you type on a television station or on a radio station? None. You don't get access.
So I'm going to come back to that.
Just a comment and then a question, because it's sort of in response to this. One of the interesting issues with intermediate communication in general is just simply that it's not an issue of bandwidth. It's an issue in most cases in terms of actual ability to communicate. It's issues like turn taking and events and some of these sorts of things, which are really important in building common ground in peer-to-peer kinds of environments. They're less important in learning environments because there's a system, an assumed system of authority and that kind of stuff, which some of this stuff in web logging and stuff kind of subverts a little bit, which is actually nice. It gives the students a little bit more power and control. But the question what Stephen was talking about in terms of what this stuff gives you that you don't get in the traditional classroom is archivability, the ability to organize things in your own fashion, for example, and the opportunity to reflect in a very constructive kind of criticism, in a constructive fashion, and finally the asynchrony, which is about being able to do it when it's appropriate for you. You don't have to all get together at the same time, which are all advantages that are particular to these kinds of online media that you don't get.
I would add the ability to open the conversation to the global scale instead of.
But what I was going to ask you, and in fact, the fact that three of you are not in traditional academic environments is probably an indication of where the answer is going to go, is the relationship between web blogging kind of activity and Stefan could probably deal with this as well, particularly because it was his area of research, and traditional structures for academic recognition, performance evaluation, and progress and promotion and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I mean, as it stands, publish or perish is not just an idea; it's the reality for many of us. And the other reality is that you won't publish stuff that has previously appeared in your or somebody else's weblog. Or at least it has become difficult to do that, because certainly in technical disciplines where novelty is one of the primary evaluations of what you're doing and not whether or not it's been published in this venue before. So I'm just wondering about that tension.
Well, I would say based on my experience, it is very difficult.
Partly because the dynamics of weblogging itself, they go entirely against the grain of academia, starting from the sort of deep disciplinary orientation of academia, mastering a specific field versus the really associative, cross-disciplinary dynamics of the link of weblogging, which is much more integrative of knowledge. Very useful for that, but difficult even to know whether to try and resist that once you get into blogging. Again, my experience getting into blogging pulls me out of an established disciplinary domain, and then making sense of that for an academic career can be difficult. That's one thing. There's the dynamics that you described around sort of in-process publishing. What I mentioned quickly as kind of iterative publishing has been my goal, my idea. I have not been very successful at it, partly for the reasons you mentioned, partly also because the tools are not really there for it. Weblogging tools aren't really designed for iterative authoring. There's not they're chronological. So far, they're not really they don't really include editorial tools. So the idea of being able to author in small bits and then kind of meta-author, putting the bits together and flowing it into either a course context or a publication for a journal. Again, those are ideas that I've had sort of driving my use of weblogs in research, but I've found it very difficult to get above the dynamics of the blogosphere and really pull that off. And then when it comes to review within the academic setting, there isn't recognition for publishing in a weblog as a legitimate forum, which is reasonable, I suppose, but rather difficult if this is an area that you're working in.
See, my answer though is, so what?
So what is that then? Perhaps you leave academia, or you move into a researcher position.
Let me take a quick crack at it. I want to base on Laura's description of blogging academia. One is, in terms of teaching, blogs are very light tools. And if I tell all my students, go to LiveJournal, make a journal, they'll say, okay, 30 minutes later, you know, they all have these ridiculously elaborate sites. And you tell them what to do. That's quicker and easier than almost any kind of technology we have.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily impact what my colleagues think, unless they get envious of good evaluations or something. The publication issue, though, I mean, I'm looking forward to the day when we can say someone gets tenured or promoted, partly because of their blogging. I think that will happen. Because the public intellectual aspect is vital.
Yeah.
It's scary that we're breaching the walls of academia, that we're rumbling the silos, and saying, you could watch, what's his name, the Baltimore, Tennessee, Glenn Reynolds, instapundit.com, one of the three most widely read blogs in the universe, God help us all.
Yeah.
Still, the guy's improv. You can still follow his thinking. You could follow, there's a right-wing thug, actually medicine, who does law, Bullock, Eugene Bullock. He's a serious scholar. His opinions, I disagree with him, he's wrong every time. They're still very rich and useful. So he has a public intellectual face, which he wouldn't get in the face-to-face environment. Two quick meta notes. One is, any new technology, I think, is accompanied by the romanticization of what people think it replaces.
Right.
So when you have the auto show up, suddenly they go, God, the romance of walking. I miss that. And they forget mud, pain, robbery, and so on. When, as Stephen knows very well, when computer-mediated teaching showed up, people said, but what about the intimacy of the classroom? And I have yet to find a human being who cannot provide vivid stories about the worst classes they had that were face-to-face, that were oral, and nightmares from which they have yet to recover. So the romanticization keeps coming. The second meta question, I will stop starting the question.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Just on that, is there one of those for publishing? Blogging as publishing, are we romanticizing?
Oh, yeah. Peer review is great.
Yeah.
No, but you hear this, well, this is the advantage of the peer review. The other thing is, when I first got into this in the early 90s, I thought we're in the verge of a revolution. Teaching and learning is going to be transformed drastically. Now I think it's a war of attrition.
Yeah, very much so.
It's going to take a so much style now. Death, retirement, a generation of bureaucrats, especially older ones and the ultimately committed ones, before we really transform everything.
I mean, like, my career, and I have a career, not because I'm an academic. Although, until I joined the NRC, that's all I ever did. I worked in colleges and universities. Exists not because I published papers in refereed academic journals. Now, I have papers published in these journals. With very few exceptions, these are all things that I published or posted online first. And then somebody later came along and said, you know, we'd like to publish this paper in our journal. And I said, sure, it's Creative Commons. Go for it. NRC is kind of squiffy about that, but I keep doing it. And we have to redefine for ourselves, first and foremost, what constitutes quality. And I'll tell you, being accepted by 2 out of 3 referees who won't even reveal who they are is not a measurement of quality. I got my job at NRC, and I got my job at NRC strictly based on the footprint that I had online, and not simply the volume of my own writing, although I've been told there is a lot of that, but on the ripple effect, right? And I was fortunate in that there's a person named Stephen Downs who actually is popular out there. He's at Utah. No, I'm just kidding. but the point is, if you write well, if you have something to say, if you put it online and get it out there for people to read, one, you will get a wider readership than any journal article would, and two, you will be recognized for it. Now, maybe not formally, but what is the purpose of this formalization? And if you're saying, well, yeah, we need this for 10-year review and things like that, you're saying, oh, but the system's saying I have to be orthodox, so your brand new thing, it better be orthodox or it won't work. Define quality for yourself, go after quality, and don't let hidden little review committees whose basis is establishing orthodoxy tell you what's good and what's bad. The Don Cherry School of Academia.
I noticed that the three members of the panel are people who are concerned with internet culture and blogging itself. So in using blogs, you're probably doing the best thing you could do. You're taking your students to the aquarium and you're studying
fish.
So that's great, but and you're a notable exception from blogging. But I think that's a really significant problem. I also think that what you just said, Steve, about recognition, that might work in the blogosphere. People are concerned about laws and about technology and internet culture and other related issues. I think there's a really significant problem with that if you're talking about stuff that. And I'm also interested in your perspective on this. If you're dealing with horror or gothic novels, that's a thing. Blogs are intrinsically oriented towards novels. And I'm interested in stuff, I'm interested in the internet, but I'm interested in how it relates to things that have been around for 50 or more years. And what is a blog going to do? Okay, so like a vertical from sociologists in the late 19th century. Like, it's not new, it's not online anywhere. How does a blog do this? It's kind of useless.
Well, I just cited Wittgenstein in a post earlier, so.
I think I want to pass it to you just very quickly on the novelty point. Blogs can, I think, indeed be about novelty in the sense of rediscovery. You know, I see it all the time, you're just watching blog decks, you see something from a year ago. Suddenly, a few people discover it who hadn't seen it before, and then a lot of people see it, and it's rediscovered. That can happen just with postings, and it also happens in niches all over the web. These niche communities oriented around all kinds of topics. It doesn't need to be... The sort of top layer of the blogosphere, certainly, that's about current events. But I think there's increasingly deep layers of niches organized around different topics.
Yeah, I agree with that. You can find a lot of depth in the blogosphere. And I've read a lot of academic papers and a lot of blog posts. And I find more depth in the blog posts than I do in the academic papers. And I'll prove that to you anytime. We'll sit down and compare.
I think this is an amazingly important issue, and there's kind of modernism that drives blogging in many ways. But part of this is an artifact of our panel, that we're on blogging academia, so we're kind of artificially carving out blogging. We're not talking about Google Print, for example,
right?
Which is truly extraordinary. And it's actually biased from the 19th century, because things are out of copyright.
Yeah.
So one thing we should do is say blogging plus large-scale digital informatics projects and academia in order to really answer your question, which I think is good.
We're going to go through logical positivism all over again.
two kind of questions. When I've worked with three or four researchers, four researchers at Concordia, and the solution what they wanted has been from the published parish talking about things that are not at the stage that they actually haven't published yet. Their solution that they kind of told me was that to create a large enough space, that academics trust each other, and then the outside kind of no one else is allowed in, so it's all asking effort. Unsuccessful in a lot of ways. I'm wondering how I saw this because basically the number of people you need inside the community is. It's kind of over here, and other people you have trust to is over there, and there's no overlap. I'm wondering if you guys, since I'm not sure you've all dealt with that model, and you can grow yourselves, and that will be okay. So I'm wondering if you have thoughts on that. And the other thing, I'm doing a enterprise 2 years ago, or a year ago, on putting all my notes online on Wiki and having class students come and put their notes, not on one Wiki page, but actually per class. And I'll be doing that project again at Concordia using Tiki Wiki, and so there's obviously the access like back blogs and stuff later on. In terms of Wiki for class notes and multiple people, Subedit doesn't work for Windows, but if you have any feedback on that, too, would be great.
Yeah, add something relating to your first point.
Trust.
Huh?
Trust.
Yeah. What I want to comment on is the publish or perish clash with blogging. Okay. Specifically, the idea that if you blog your ideas, people will steal them and publish them for you. It would take a lot of gall for someone to steal your idea and proceed to pass it from peer review and publish it under their name when there's a post of yours that has been published, has a timestamp on it, that has been replicated typically on many other servers archived by Google and the Internet Archive that shows that you had the idea yourself and you were the first to put it out.
So
maybe it's an uncommon fear. I don't really buy it, though I know many people do.
I just want to give up that transition to Wikina, which is one thing about blogging that surprises me. One of the reasons I taught writing before I ever got to the web was that writing, I think, creates different cognitive structures in which students learn and write, I think. And for me, I know how it's cheesy to say writing is a widget skill. It's actually true. It will change the way you think. I find that as I blog, ideas will emerge, and I look back at the archive, wow, I should be talking about X. That's interesting. Let me think about that. I don't know. There's kind of emergent logic. Now, I can do this on a registration. I have to apply the same thing. But I wish I had a book. It would have been a lot easier to discover some ideas. I would have written better. I would have written more effective objects. That's what I was supposed to do.
I've used wikis a couple of times in an electronic culture course. I can hold them up quickly. I use it specifically in a 5-week module on emergence, on the dynamics of emergence.
Does everyone know what the wiki is? Does anyone not know what the wiki is?
No one does, man.
Basically, it's a website that is editable by anyone who can see the page. Editable by anyone.
Which brings us to the subject of Wiki spam.
Yes.
Yeah, spam.
I wanted to ask a question on the panel around the second part of Laura's proposed framework there about blogs as teaching tools, specifically in the context of online education. Many of us have seen lots of different presentations over the last few years about possible uses of blogs in education, and also in these contacts and course management systems, and a lot of criticisms for that management system. But I'm interested in the panel's reflections on the potential shortcomings of blogs as teaching tools.
One example is there's a knowledge management consultant named Adam Gray, who's very, very smart and really worth following. And he has the argument that blogs are what he calls second-order social software. He's a big wiki fan, and he'll say, well, the wiki, the four of us could collaborate and generate a clever document. But if each of us maintain a blog, we can link to each other, we can comment, but still it's spread apart. It's not quite unified. And it might be, and I know students often prefer this, they want to get the individual credit, they want that timestamp, they want that all. But if we're pushing collaboration at any level of pedagogy, that really cuts across the disciplines, that's not necessarily the best tool. That's one. The second is the push for time. Now if you have a sense of what I said this morning, you know, five times a week or so, that might not be where a student is thinking. And that might not be a fair demand. A course management tool like Lameboard will have doesn't have an expectation. They're quite static, and that might be an important tool. Do I have a wiki class
code? Sure. I was thinking something until that last came out about
that's how my brain works. It works really well until I try to use it.
Well, one of the concerns that I've had using weblogs is it appropriate to assign topics for weblogging? you know, that is kind of introducing people to a genre of authoring that part of whose value is that it's individually driven by self-interest and self-direction, and to assign it and give weekly assignments, which in fact I do. You know, these are the readings, present them, blog about them, you know, and I give certain kinds of leeway and try and be clear about that, but it is assigned blogging. I'm not sure that that's good for the blogosphere in the long term, if you see what I mean, or a good or fair way to introduce students to blogging. It's difficult to mark. That's something for an instructor. But on the other hand, one of the things that I enjoy about it, again, my course is a little bit unusual because I'm teaching them not just the content, but also about the tools and to some extent the coding. You know, so they're expected to be doing work on their blogs that covers those three areas. And I allow them within that to determine for themselves where they want to place their emphasis. If they're more into learning custom style sheets and they put more energy into that, they'll get recognition. So that I find I find that it's more adaptive to different learning styles up to a point. At the same time, there are students for whom that kind of writing is simply going to be difficult. But again, I think it's a very good training to get people to learn how to think quickly on their feet and author in a way that's accessible to others.
In the last year or so, I've seen at least a dozen different trainings on blogging that have been offered at universities, community colleges, sometimes at conferences as an adjunct boot camp on blogging for the newbie. At what point do you think it's going to be a bachelor's degree in blogging or graduate now? You know, there's 50 million fish in that aquarium. There are a lot of people blogging. So it can be an academic discipline in some right, which is a site that builds stuff. What would you say to both of you once you cover it?
I think part of the question is whether blogging will... Is blogging going to become something that you can be specialized in? Is it going to become professionalized just like law or other things? Or is it going to become part of our culture? Just like TV and movies are. Movie making is not, and TV making is not. But, for instance, writing is part of our culture, and you can't really, for the basics of writing, I mean, literacy, that part, it has become so widespread that there's nothing to speak about in terms of being professional at writing.
You could also be said, movie production, TV production are not part of our culture?
They are part of our culture, consumer culture, but making them is not, it's becoming amateur driven, and maybe it's going to spread out as well.
It is also part of the community. I mean, film interpretation is a staple, TV interpretation is increasingly appearing in colleges and universities. And production is, of course, looked down on, but it does occur, student TV stations.
Yes.
Certainly, I think the study of blogs will be an academic discipline. I think people are already getting masters and PhDs in the study of blogs. And I think that particularly as the types of things that we put into our blogs changes, there's going to be more and more of a really obscure, confusing academic discipline on interpreting what a person actually meant when they put this video or that sound bite or that image or that bit of text into their blog. Because I think that blogging creates not just a new means of using the old tools of text and images and so on, but I think that it creates something that's roughly akin to a new language, where the words of a language are the multimedia and textual elements in a blog post. And so when a person puts up a post, say, flaming somebody or whatever, what they're saying isn't what the words in their post say. What they're saying is how this post fits into the context of everything else that they've done in their blog. and studying this and understanding this will be an academic discipline. And I think it'll be, you know, like critical theory. Nobody will understand it. Everyone will hate it. And eventually it'll be discredited.
What?
I'm just kidding. But I do think it's going to be necessary because it will be, I mean, it's like a meta language that people will be using, and people are already using that sort of meta language with their multimedia posts today. It will be dead, sure. Well, I hope not.
Splitter is a form of death, but I would say, you know, we're talking about blogging as an established historical artifact. I find that kind of dizzying in a historical sense. I remember the first time I taught my Vietnam class, I realized that my students didn't know the Cold War happened. The gray hair is moving as we have up here. I was talking with Scopel this morning, just before lunch. And Stephen and I are on an online conference right now.
Right now, yeah.
And,
which we really should go to.
It's difficult to police the boundaries of blogging, because blogging leads to wikis. It leads to Delicious and Flickr and tagging.
And post news.
So we look at tools like Daypop, Technorati, Waypath, Blogdex. I know I sound like I'm reading from Dr. Seuss' book. I can show you any of these right now. You're talking about something that goes beyond blogging. I think that social software might be a larger header for this. It might not.
Personal publishing.
This is a class I wanted to show where students collaborated in producing documents and criticism about British Romanticism. So if you go through the site, you'll see that it looks like a class until you realize that most of it is about students constructing resources. And if you scroll down, you'll see that, that the whole paradigm of the class changes in that these are the important people. There's not a picture of Wordsworth in the front, it's these guys. If you just keep scrolling down, you see the organization, that this is what they want to produce. This is actually a tough class. The Romantic Audience is a hard thing to assess out. This is a very, very detailed site. It's not chronologically organized,
right,
although you can pull that through if you want. It's more topical. So this is a case of this is from Bowdoin College.
And I'll just follow on there with this is a one of seven, I think, team wikis from this fall from the Emergence module for the Electronic Culture course that I mentioned earlier, where they it's up to each team to determine how they want to organize the wiki for themselves. So they're both studying, they're reading Stephen Johnson's book on Emergence, and also sort of researching wiki culture and wiki practices. And each team comes up with their own strategies for organizing the information and using the wiki as a learning environment. This team did a particularly good job, I think, of, you know, they have to-do lists, they are using Strikeout to track their tasks, they're organizing their, they've divided their discussion areas from then when they sort of boil the material down at the end of the module, creating.
So they've structured. They build the architecture of.
Yeah,
session.
Yeah, they did, and they're graded on whether they, you know, have their contents tree make sense or not, which is something that's peculiar to the Zope wiki, right? So. Yeah. It may be behind a password because of spam. At this point, but I will look into that. I'll post it. Going back to the constraints issue, I've been doing this without technical support, and that's a little bit difficult. We got hit with spam in the middle of the semester last year, but it has been publicly available. And that's just something I want to mention about the use of social software for teaching. A comment that I had from students at the end of this past term, students who were very enthusiastic, was that it contextualized for them, working outside of a password-protected CMS, gave them a sense of the value of not just what they were learning in this class, but of what they were learning in all of their classes together, how it connected with what's going on out there on the web. They also see themselves coming up in Google. They see their own weblog. They get links to by other people, and it gives them a tremendous sort of energy and enthusiasm for the tools and for writing and for what they're studying in school.
And it makes the learning less artificial, because all of a sudden what they're doing as their class exercise becomes part of the discipline, the real discipline out there in the world.
I just came up with a couple sentences to reply to Phil's question about teaching blogging. I don't think there's going to be teaching blogging in like 20 years from now,
in the same sense that there's no teaching phones, the use of phones right now. There's no formal structures to teach how to use a phone because you have so many people around you doing it that someone can sit down and show you how to operate it. However, it's a kind of river that's flowing, and right now we're at the beginning of the river, and there are many non-bloggers, so we have to teach them. And when that is acquired, maybe I'm being overly optimistic about what further this whole thing is going. But if this happens, then next is going to be knowing how to operate other kinds of social software, how to operate wikis and stuff like that, and then it's going to evolve like that.
Was there ever a class in teaching how to use instant messaging? I don't think that ever came up.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Funny.
I have a question. You have been obviously said with the SGO or anything. Instead of talking about the shortcomings or anything, and then there's a lot of threats that a lot of people obviously have with blogging, especially in academia, I'm really curious to know what do you think can be improved? I know that as a kind of raw sense that wikis and blogs are really elementary raw structure, and that for academia, it needs to be really specialized, really focused. This is something that I was curious because I wrote for Ryan, so this is kind of my job now. But that's why I'm really interested to see, as people have been doing this for so long, what do you think, how can it be changed, or how can it just be built upon from base, from raw wiki, like your students have done, or from a blog that you've been doing for a while. What needs to be changed in order so that you can function, everybody can function, like, faster. Like, you can market on fly, you can kind of have more interesting, like, metadata ways of collaboration, and things like that, where you can be built upon.
Push it into the background. Like everybody's sitting here in this room, and there are some people taking notes, and there are some people sending email, some people taking pictures and all of that, and everybody's trying to capture a little bit in their own way of the experience. But if what happens here just goes into the system and then you can start working with it, or you don't even think of working with it, it's just there when you need it. So, like, just by being here, you get the entire audio, video, text, searchable, etc., of this session, and so on. Like, it should... Blogging, personal publishing should be like water, like electricity. They should be part of the environment, the thing that we use to do other things that are interesting. Because simply writing a blog post, and unless you're a writer, in which case it's inherently fascinating, but simply writing a blog post, there's no real upside to that. It's what you hope to get out of writing the blog post, the communication of an idea, the expression of a concept, the making of a connection, the working out of something for yourself. Now, unless you're a writer qua writer, the blog post is a means to an end. Same with reading blogs or reading, learning resources or viewing a video. You're not doing it just to be doing it. You're doing it because you learn something, because it entertains you, because it keeps you up to date with your family. So we want the tools and the mechanisms to get out of the way. We want the work to get out of the way so that we can go straight to the benefit. I want to be able to easily write a letter to my grandmother just by saying, okay, I'm writing a letter to my grandmother. Hi, Grandma, how are you doing? So on and so forth. I just do it. And I don't worry about the tool. It's like the lights up there. When I came into this room, I didn't go through a process of booting up the lights and making sure that they were configured to my sensory receptors. They were just there. And it's just an ambient surround, and it's a mechanism that allows me to read and allows me not to trip over the wires, but I don't think of being in a lighted rooming.
So we're in the car maker of the Model T.
I have a slightly different perspective as a someone who really likes writing tools. I enjoy the engagement with the tools. I fuss with them.
But you're a writer.
But I'm a writer. But I do enjoy that. There's a certain kind of productive friction and dynamic from that I get from the tool.
Why don't you use a pen?
Pen
will slow you right down.
I do sometimes, but I particularly enjoy the peculiar drag of wikis and weblogs, and I enjoy what they teach me to think in a different way, and I'm curious about that. Something that I want is sort of an integrated weblog and wiki, similar to social text is a tool that allows you to view a particular bit of content as either a wiki page or a weblog posting. I want something that takes that much further, that allows you to use a weblog, a chronological weblog, to generate bits of content and then to massage it, edit it, recombine it.
I think we have to keep in mind that this is a very immature medium.
Yeah.
We're really far away from maturity there. There's the blog form has kind of crystallized for a little while. Yeah, it's going to heat up and melt and become something else, maybe.
It's already fragmenting with audio blogging and video blogging and photo blogging. It's already fragmenting. And then you get social blogging, like in LiveJournal, and then you get everything. And so, I mean, it's almost not a discrete form even now. I mean, 5 years from now, we'll be thinking, we had a conference on blogging. How did we pull that off?
That before it's legal. Yeah.
Well, there is that, too.
Also, a better integration of media. I'd like to annotate video and sound files.
Yeah.
And that's for comments on.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, it seems like that would be fastest. The second thing is that I want to solve the copyright problem, but that's going to take a long, drawn-out war and violence. Searchability, we're all preventing.
Yeah.
Searchability is pretty poor. We have metadata crisis right now, where, as J.C. Hurd says, metadata is garbage. It doesn't function. And we're reduced to tagging right now, which is this desperate, lame elementary school solution that doesn't even work. That's a serious problem. Google hits maybe a third of stuff on the web. We're still figuring out how to find stuff. But that's a huge problem.
How do you find something when you don't know what it's called?
Right.
It's the old dictionary problem.
Yes.
I want to comment about the use of blogging within a literary context. It seems to me that the origins of blogging have some relationship to literature as it's been practiced as a form of writing, although, as Stephen points out, there's lots of new emergent forms of blogging coming along. And I'm wondering, not so much about blogging as being akin to learning how to use a telephone, because we could say writing is learning how to type. So I'm wondering if you could comment on some of what you see the literary aspects of blogging as being. And if we were to think of blogging as being something that gets taught or becomes a discipline, how much of that teaching and that discipline aspect of blogging is in fact about, you know, the sorts of things that you would hear in literary discussions around blog and character and setting and so on and so forth. So are there similar aspects to blogging that you might call forth?
No, it's the blog as a genre of writing, basically, that you're talking about, I guess. I think there's actually a blog on this. There's a research group that studies blogging as a genre. I don't know, it's a French word, and I have to pronounce it.
Go for it.
English accent.
Jenner.
So
that's not how I hear people say it in French.
In itself, it is interesting to look into this, and I think these kinds of topics are going to keep being studied. So there are two parts, basically, and it's a good point you make. There are two parts to blogging. The first one is mastering the mechanics, just like holding a pen or being able to type with your fingers. And the other more important part is figuring out how to transfer the fuzzy stuff that's in your head into actual words or links or the concrete form and how you're going to shape it. And this is much more of an art than anything else, I guess. And I believe it's going to be studied seriously over the years to come.
So just to follow on, I mean, some of you are using these within your academic courses. So do you provide any guidance to your students on these aspects of doing the law, or do you just say, here's the tools for the law?
I do provide some of that. I hadn't intended on that at first. It's been interesting teaching this course over 3 years. It started out being really focused on the content, and the weblogs were just a platform, but I discovered that, you know, very quickly we needed instruction in weblogging, both the technical aspect but also the protocols of weblogging and the different subgenres. And there is discussion of that on the web. There are filter blogs that are primarily just a quick note and a link, and then there are the more journalistic blogs. And there's, you know, kind of an increasing array of types of types of weblogs. I think, again, though, we come back to Seb's point that we're at a very early stage in the development of the medium, and where I see, I think, what I'm getting from your question, where I see that that aspect of weblogs emerging is as people possibly begin experimenting with kind of reworked weblogs. But this may be a bias of mine, but to me, a lot of writing is rewriting, which you're not supposed to do on a weblog posting unless you leave a very clear trail. This is true. But to really sort of rework a configuration of blog postings into some kind of shape that lasts over time, I'm very curious what that would be. I want to do it, but the tools aren't quite there yet. There are some. At the same time, I have to say, I really hope that the sense of weblogs as an amateur practice and not a professional practice, I really hope that stays. I think it's deeply important to protect that. It's an ethos of the blogosphere that I think we need.
See, I think there's going to be a different literature of blogging. You know, we think of literature. We study literature. We study books. We study poems. And we have certain ways of understanding literature. But what characterizes almost all of this literature is that it's static, that it's linear. That has a flow or a theme or something like that. Now, not all literature, obviously, and there are certainly exceptions. But I think that blogs and blog posts exist in a different milieu. I wrote a post the other day because I realized what I was doing. Eventually I'll retire and I won't be writing or doing things anymore, and I'll look back and I'll ask myself, well, what was my contribution to literature? We'll work for a moment assuming that there is one. And if I had to say anything, it would be my collection of blog posts. I'm up to about 8,000 or so now. Now, these things are, I write short. I write 100, 200 word posts. That's just the style that I've adopted. Because my blog doesn't have a literary background. My blog has a bookmark background. And a bit of a journalism background. So if I can capture something in 100 words, I'm there. But what I noticed is that I'm telling the same story over and over.
Yeah.
And yes, Seven, would you stop?
I'm a long time reader. 8,000 posts of it.
But what I'm doing now, I could, if I had spent the same amount of time, sat down and wrote a book, and it would have a beginning, and it would have chapters, and it would have an end, and then it would have critics. But what I've got is 8,000 posts, and who knows how many by the time that I'm done, and they exist not as a linear structure, but as a mob. And I did a little post the other day, and I realized when I take all of these posts and just sort of put them in concept space, and then you can draw lines through them. This is a way of looking at it. This is a way of looking at it. And what I said when I realized what I had done, I put in a key post so that people would understand, or at least so that I would. The structure of what I've written has become holographic. And what I've said actually depends on how you enter into it. You take any one of my posts, and there's the post, and the content of the post reflects. So you look at this post, and the follow all the connections, I'm saying this. You look at this post, and I'm saying that. Now that's something you can't pull off in literature. Or at least you couldn't. The only person I can think of who did it is Wittgenstein. I don't know if Wittgenstein knew that he was doing it, but again, Wittgenstein writes 100, 200 word items, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, and then we get the assemblage of these things into a book, you know, Philosophical Investigation. They just took all of his little scraps and piled them in an order because it's the only way they could publish it.
Walter Benjamin's Arcade Project.
There you go.
Because he died before he finished.
There's
also the different aphorisms from the authors like Chamfort.
Sure.
Nietzsche's middle period and later period, where his stuff is extremely aphoristic, very dense. But what you're talking about is hypertext. And that's one of the things about blogging, is that it's just the active hypertext so far.
But now it becomes not just my hypertext, because you don't really understand my blog unless you read Seb's blog and James Farmer's blog, and you've got to take their little bits of the hologram and intersperse them.
That's one discussion you can have about how far you can go. I want to explain what's up here and why the 17th century appeared suddenly. I assume everybody's here is familiar with 17th century prosody. Samuel Pepys, not Pepys, it's pronounced Pepys, so don't embarrass yourself, wrote diaries from the 1660s, and they're really amazing. They're fascinating to study. He was very open about his life in many embarrassing ways. He lived through some amazing times. But, I've got to tell you, I taught this, it is death to read, unless you're an 18th, 17th century obsessive. It's very hard, it's very cryptic, it's very strange. So a computer programmer in London, who's out of work, found that Pepys' diary was public domain, upload the entire thing and publish it as a blog.
Right.
So you'll see he publishes the date from a year. So we have 18th February and so on. So you can read it this way, which is pedagogically very powerful, but also if you scroll down a little bit, you see that all these keywords are hyperlinked?
Yeah.
Because it's annotated so that you know when he says Ms. X, that's that woman he's sleeping with. Or my boy home, where that is, or Charles II, by the way, it's the king, and so on. People annotate this. So there are people who have more time than I do who will say, well, actually, Whitehall was 4 years down the road that way. Here's a map that I have. And it'll add up here. The result is extraordinary. The door's closed. This is a little kind of secret. I'm starting a blog in the first week of May. If anyone has read Dracula as an adult, you know that it's actually a scrapbook of stuff. Telegrams, letters, journals. It's not a seamless body. I'm going to be blogging. I have a book edition coming out later this year. I'm going to be blogging it on the dates when it takes place. It's going to start May 3rd and end in November. So
you told a secret to a room full of bloggers.
Why? And don't tell your friends.
It's kind of humbling to think that someone who's been dead for something like 300 years is probably getting more comments than I do.
Great question.
And so that's a long time and a lot of amazing conversation. I want to come all the way back to you. I'm a student in an entirely online management degree, and it works. But I learned recently, I'm a blogger, and I want to talk about the narrowness of the framework you guys put on this book. It really matters to have person-to-person contact. Anything we do to provide more presence of other, an experience of the presence of others, is majorly different. I noticed that just in a few times, some students who crossed 16 time zones got in a net meeting together or got onto a conference, void conference call. We're like, oh, he's got a British accent. Yeah. Hold up. And we do. And the other thing I noticed is I often become more related to people than even the people I may have met in a collegial way in other circumstances. I become more related to them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When I finished, by the time I was finished my PhD, I had very, very strong ties with researchers overseas.
Sure.
And I had literally no very strong tie with anyone in my department. In the sense that, everyone cares about these things, you know? But in the sense that I could have gone and stayed at Sebastian Pietler's apartment and exchanged ideas and ate breakfast together, and I would never have thought of asking this of people I was meeting virtually every day physically.
Semantical connection versus random connection.
Just thinking about meaning, like from my God, so